but we took, Union was down about $6,000, $7,000 last year. And then Glen Rock, Ralph Price Reservoir is full. So this year we kind of switched around. Union's only down about 2,000 acre feet, and then Glen Rock's down about, around 6,000.
Okay, so what I was reading
through. So we're close to average, a little bit above average releases, but pretty close to it.
Okay. When I was reading through that, I remembered that there was something that we discussed in previous meetings about some kind of switch over, like
yeah.
And then on page 19 here, so the Colorado Water Basin, it's the storage level at March 1st was 82%. And then on the South Platte River Basin reservoir storage at March 1st is 101%. So as you can see, if you go to the top there, you can see that's, so we basically have Boulder County, Laramie County, and Grand County there, and Jackson County to the top. So with Grand, Boulder County, Laramie, we're dry and moderate drought. So it's, we're kind of holding that. I looked at, this was March 8th, but I just looked at March 17th, and we're the same. So we're still, if we keep getting the weather patterns that we're currently in now, where that's important this time of year, because if you don't get those weather patterns, it's, you know, rain, snow here, snow in the mountains, then that snowpack starts to drop. So especially if we get the warm weather and dry, so we definitely need to, I know we're supposed to get warm and dry this weekend, but hopefully we'll start keeping those patterns. And I was going to touch base on the peak. We're getting close to the, I may not have it handy. I wrote it down, but I don't see what it's at. Okay, so on the Colorado River Basin, we have 23 days till it peaks for the snowpack, and then South Platte, we have 35 days, so we still need those weather patterns. So basically all I have, if there's any questions.
Any questions?
This is very similar to last year, right?
Yes, actually, so for the most part, last year, we're in better shape this year than last year, except for this time last year, around March 18th, we had that fourth highest snow in this region, the Front Range region. So that's what kind of, that was the March 18th, 19th, I believe. And that's what really changed last year's, because we're kind of projected, we were going higher. So we were really dry all the way up until towards the end of December. Then we had all that snow, last part of December and January this year. And then in February, we had like 63%, 4%, or 5% of precipitation. And so it started going down. Now March, we've been getting up above average precipitation. So we're pretty close. It'd be nice to get a big snow, that's for sure.
Yeah, the real difference from last year isn't so much our basin, it's this Colorado River Basin was in extreme drought, red, about half of the entire western soil.
Yeah.
There was the earlier snows this year, mid-year Christmas snows, really helped that Colorado River Basin.
Well, that's a good point, because Colorado River Basin is definitely better shaped right now. Because that snow so much talked about mainly impacted. It did a little bit, it did in the mountains, but mainly on the Front Range of the Central Mountains that it did impact. So.
Any other questions? Thanks, Nelson.
Thank you.
Okay, cash in lieu. Kellen, you're going
to... Yeah, I just report real quickly. The action, of course, I think I sent out an email. The council went ahead and approved the resolution on the change of the cash in lieu to 485. So that went pretty smoothly. We had a pretty good flush of cash flow come in the 21 days before that council meeting. We probably brought in as much cash flow as we did the 2 years prior, so which it was expected.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of land out there though, but you have to come in. And so we didn't, because that was just approved of like a couple weeks ago, we don't have any additional information for the March cash in lieu setup. We have got a little bit of information on CBT. It has, it was kind of sitting steady at about 60 grand a unit, but we know of at least one entity trying to purchase. They just put out on the market, it says, I want 200 shares of CBT, and they're offering 65,000 a share, or a unit. And so I think they're gonna say, they bumped the market up $5,000. But in terms of some of the local water rights, not a lot of change there. The one thing that I think I briefly mentioned this last month, council is, in addition to looking at affordable housing, they are also looking at kind of the next category of attainable housing. We may end up, we'll be probably coming back to Water Board to talk about how will attainable housing look in the water raw water requirement policy. We may have a program similar to our affordable housing program. Actually, right now there is a task force that I'm not on, so I can't tell you what kind of where the progress is, but there's a task force that's looking at attainable housing. Really kind of need to come up with a definition and how we do it. So you know, that kind of a process takes a little bit of time to get it right and bring it together. So we're not ready yet to start having the conversation about it, you know, how that might look. But I, you know, if council directs us, we could easily come up with a program similar to the affordable housing. So just kind of a heads up that we'll probably be coming forward in sometime in the near future, you know, next quarter or so. As soon as we'll keep you up to, as soon as we hear about the attainable housing kind of task force, kind of their work, we'll bring you up to speed on that and let you know what's going on. I don't know, Marcia, if you have anything more from council perspective?
I kind of do and kind of don't. You know, there has not been discussion, and recently it seems like the discussion is among the housing staff, and then it comes to council bait. So, you know, I don't get a lot of previews, but what I can say is that, you know, of course, attainable housing has bigger margins than affordable housing and more flexible financing requirements than affordable housing. So the incentives don't necessarily need to be as great as they do for affordable housing. But short of that, I have no idea. You know, the staff is younger, so maybe possibly, you know, different ideas about what's going, you know, what's going to be appropriate. So I'm hoping that there will be something innovative that comes before council. But I have not stuck my nose into it yet, so I don't have any inside information.
Okay, cool. So it sounds like attainable housing isn't well defined yet, or?
Well, attainable housing kind of is well defined in terms of for sale housing. It is 80% of the area median income on the bottom, and either 100 or 110% of the area median income at the top end. But does everybody know what area median income is? Okay.
You know what it means? I don't know what the number is.
Well, the number changes all the time, and it depends on the size of your family, and it, you know, so there's never a number. Anyway, as long as you know that it's roughly, you know, the median is how much people make here, and it's supposed to be a measure of livability. You know, do you earn enough to actually buy a house here? And the answer is if you're below 80, no. And right now the market's so out of balance that the answer is no, unless you're above 100, at least. So again, this is not something that HUD forces a definition on us, so as it is for affordability, right? So we will come up with our own definition of attainability in terms of what needs to be incentivized. Other agencies not in the federal stack, like economic development partnerships, you know, which we have the Longmont Economic Development Partnership, and then it is a member of associations of similar organizations. So they have data that they'll be presenting to us, and we'll be trying to come up with a good definition that allows housing to be built for what can be afforded, you know, what people can afford. Because right now, as you probably already know, Ken, the city's having a really hard time recruiting employees.
Yeah, I'm trying to formulate it. I just don't know a whole lot about the topic, right? So, but I do know, for example, like, I mean, for Longmont to have an affordable housing program, that would, the incentives of that, in addition to diversity, et cetera, it would kind of relate to accessing perhaps like HUD programs and pools of money that perhaps
yes.
wouldn't otherwise be available. Is that same type of thing, because HUD doesn't have a definition for attainable housing, is there like kind of like loan incentives and other types of kind of like community program incentives or something that are available by having an attainable housing program and striving for that? Or is it mostly just like Longmont's interest in doing?
Well, it's only the ones we make ourselves. So the, for example, the Economic Development Partnership has enlisted a loan agency, whose name is escaping me, but it's the one that is co-housed with the EDP. The way it works is that employers, primary employers who can afford to do this, will agree with the loan agency to kind of provide some security for these loans, and then their employees get first pick and better deal in interest rates and waived fees and all like that. That makes it easier for them to get house loans. And that's all great, except that you have to have something to buy. And right now there's not enough stock, you know, because the housing stock that's on the market at Longmont right now is like everything's above 500,000, and everything that you'd actually want is above 700,000. And, you know, so we got to build other types of housing because the cost of land is so high.
That's really helpful, actually. So, and that's where kind of the innovation part perhaps is coming in.
Yes.
Thinking about, like, okay, what could we do internally, regardless of whether or not there's these external programs that perhaps, like there are for affordable housing.
Right, yeah, so you don't get to use things like low-income tax credits for this.
Yeah.
But, so, just this is a teeny-weeny example, but Longmont really recently passed an ordinance that says if you've got a single-family home on a lot now, and you would like to make that single family home into a duplex, you can let it be a duplex, and you know, you have to meet other requirements, like it has two kitchens, right, stuff like that. But you don't have to double number of water meters and electric meters and stuff, so you can have the landlord split up the consumption however they decide to do it. And so you get rid of the expense of having all those new connect fees for the duplex. And that is considerable, you know, depending on the house and the size and everything, it's like $25,000 to $50,000 in fees. So that's a big incentive, even though it seems little when you describe it. And so things like that, we hope we can come up with a lot more to encourage density, which will then lower the cost of the housing.
All right. And again, I appreciate Ken and Mark your work on getting this cash and new thing moving forward, so I appreciate it. All right. How about the Windy Gap Firming Project?
Okay. Just real quick update on the Windy Gap Firming Project. It's luckily going very well. So couple pictures here I wanted to show. The first one is to get to the site, they need a road. Now the main access for the construction is a different road, but this shows where there's a bridge that's being built over the penstock, the CVT penstock. That bridge will actually be after the reservoir is built, you got a 300 foot tall dam, up on the side of the hill, there's a bridge that comes, a road that will come around and serve not only the reservoir, it's a road to the backside of the reservoir. There's a containment dike on the backside of the reservoir that needs to be maintained, but it will also serve as the access for Larimer County open space property, which is immediately adjacent and will have a tie-in with the project itself. One of the things that is constructed and done, this is a cofferdam. It's actually a 50-foot tall dam, so it's one of the highest dams around here. Button Rock's taller, but most of the reservoirs around here are much less than 50-foot. That's just the cofferdam. That's just to protect the main dam during the construction of the reservoir. But as you can see, that's a pretty substantial facility.
And it's done.
It's done. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's that's a big deal.
Getting used to the pace of municipal action. I mean,
I'll throw federal out there.
A government project.
Yeah,
I get it. That is good news. So this is a better view. This is today, and you can see up here is that bridge coming over the penstock and the road up around the reservoir. This is the main footprint of the dam. If you can imagine it doing this, this is the center line of the dam. They've completely excavated down to the bottom of the dam site, which is the most critical point in any dam construction. You open 30, 40 places, almost 50 foot cut from the historic, you got down, you opened it up, and we didn't find any big major surprises. There's always small things you find, but we didn't find a fault line that wasn't known. We didn't find a weak section in there, we've kind of taken one step past the scariest, most dangerous part of any dam construction, and they're actually now starting to, I'll say, come up. This is called a plinth. It's basically a concrete foundation that you pour on top of the underlying bedrock, drill down, rebar down it. It's concrete rebar, pretty substantial. That will go clear across the bottom, and then you build the dam on top of it so that you have a good connection. This plinth is just a concrete connection between the bedrock, underlying bedrock, and the dam that will go on top. As you remember, this is a hydraulic asphalt dam, so the actual hydraulic asphalt core, which is pretty narrow, like 6 foot at the bottom and 4 foot at the top, will be right on top of that plinth and go clear to the top of the dam. So that is under construction, and you can see that going. And then the cofferdam was over here, just upstream of it, and the quarry is already completely cleaned off, and they're actually they're blasting and producing rock for the construction of the dam, because that rock placement's the big deal for this. I mean,
7 days a week, 2.5 years of blowing up rock and placing it in the dam. So that is the construction. That's where we are, and doing really good. I mean, we're real happy with that. I find a little interesting. You can see the road over here from the bridge, and then the road that'll go around. Right up in this area, there's the Larimer County will have a recreation area and a parking lot and, you know, a boat ramp and all that for future recreational access. That's being constructed as part of this project, paid for by Larimer County because it's a parking lot for their use, but it's being built right now because the project will then be able to use that parking lot to stage construction out of, especially as the dam gets higher and you bury all this stuff down there. but it'll actually serve a dual use. So project's going very well. There's nothing, you know, they're probably nine, if you look at how much money you want to spend, which is a lot, $1 million a month type stuff, a little more than that. We're about like 96%, 97% of where we would like to be at this point, where you project. So it got slowed down a little bit by that snow in Christmas snows and a few other snowstorms, but not much. So it's going quite well. The other part of kind of the whole project is a connectivity channel on the west slope, which is to bring the Colorado River around the Windy Gap Reservoir over by Lake Granby. That is still moving forward. They're actually doing some preliminary work. They've done a lot of clearing and grubbing and whatnot for that. The still don't have a permit yet. we're crossing our fingers. The public input process ended, I think, March 10th or something like that. So hopefully, I mean, we're expecting all good comments. I don't know who would say don't build a connectivity channel, but you never know. But that comment period is, and so now that should be completed. We hope that permitting process gets completed pretty quickly. Everybody's still on board. That seems to be going quite well. And then the final thing I wanted to bring up, Northern Water, because this is a construction site, you can't go in and poke around, but Northern, the municipal sub-district project, is holding tours, limited tours for board members. So I would open it up to see if the board is interested in setting up a tour. We're getting a little bit better weather here, and I think a tour in April or May or June or July, whatever. Otherwise, if you're interested, if the board is interested, we'd be happy to set up a tour to get up there. You know, we're not going to go out actually in the middle of the site, but they can get us up to where you can see everything. One side is right. This picture, of course, is taken from the east side of the reservoir, basically right up above Carter Lake, looking down in the valley. There's a place there. We can go up, look from this site, and then also take you up. Can take you into the, on the right side of the picture, you can see the sheds, and there's four big construction locations there, and then up by the bridge. But and I don't know. I don't know if we'll be able to, at some point, we'll be able to start riding that road, too. So,
I see a lot of nodding heads, so.
Okay.
I think there's some interest in doing that, so.
Okay, I'll be happy to set that up. Go ahead.
I would also be interested in seeing the connectivity channel.
Absolutely. Got to wait till we do something over there. But
whenever that comes to
that's, thank you for mentioning that, because we will. That's a really good idea, because we can look at a lot of stuff there. I don't know if you've ever been in the pumping plant over there.
Not in it.
We can.
Are they doing their tours this year?
Maybe not yet. They're talking about. They haven't announced them.
But yeah, that's, we can certainly work that out too. So does the board have a feeling? I mean, would you like to do something sooner, like April, or wait until a little later in May when it's better weather? Wait until June when it's nice and hot? But we can try to set something up, whatever works best in everybody's schedules.
My only thought, April might be a little iffy weather-wise, I don't know.
You can set the date up, and then it can snow 12 inches that day.
So I get it. Past April. But,
okay, well, let me talk to Northern about doing something maybe in May. Beautiful up there in May.
Yeah.
And we'll get something set up. And what would you prefer, like an afternoon tour this time of the day? Would you prefer an evening, closer to evening? I don't know if they'll do something on the weekend, but I can ask that too. I don't know if there's any preference.
I think afternoon can, like we would have a meeting here, it makes the most sense. I just look at, as you get towards the end of the school year, it's pretty busy to try to fit something else in.
It does. Would a lunch tour that on the day of waterboard, that then we come back to waterboard? Something like that makes it the 18th of, no, that's 18th of April. I don't remember what the May date is. I could look at maybe a waterboard, so you only have to kind of compress one afternoon in.
I couldn't do the 16th, but
is that the May?
That's not anyone. Everybody else is good with that.
Wait till June also.
What'd you say?
So we can wait till June also.
Sure.
The one on the means.
Sure.
Or should the board be on tons available either, so.
And later, if you wait till June, you'll see the dam starting to go up. It should be, well, I don't know. That plinth is going to take a while to get further up. But there.
So, you know the June water board date?
Is that right, Marcia? Did you all vote for that?
Juneteenth?
Yeah.
Yeah, the 20th.
So it would be the 27th we would do it?
Oh, yes. The 20th is, I'm glad you know what you're at.
There's a new city holiday.
I forgot about that, Juneteenth. Because Juneteenth
the Monday after June 19th is a city holiday.
Yeah.
So we scheduled our board meeting on the 27th?
Yeah.
Nice.
Gonna shoot for that date. How it
works out. Okay. Well, let me check into that.
All right.
And we'll see where that goes.
Okay, Ken.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, Jason, you're up.
To add to the Windy Gap, I don't know if you guys are into Facebook or not, but they've got a Facebook page called Chimney Hollow. And I don't know how often they're adding pictures, but they're taking some really gorgeous pictures. I don't know if they paid a photographer, if somebody just really knows how to use an iPhone. But anyway, I've been following that. I think if you just like it, then you'll start to get pictures in your news feed on Facebook. So I'd encourage you to check it out because they've got some pretty cool pictures that you don't get to see from the public's perspective. All right. And so typically I give you guys a verbal update, which you've been very patient with me. so I thought I'd give you some illustrations so you could actually maybe understand what it is I'm saying here. I'm going to hand these down. So the first one is the South St. Vrain Pipeline Pump Station. And so here, this is just basically a site plan. So the top blue line is the North St. Vrain pipeline, and the blue line on the bottom is the South St. Vrain pipeline. And you can see the South St. Vrain pipeline goes into a wet well. That's the box structure there that then funnels water into the pump station, which then gets pushed into the North St. Vrain pipeline. And so this here, we've currently issued notice to proceed. Glacier Construction is out there right now. They've actually cleared this lot. They're doing an outstanding job. We've removed trees. We've been working with neighbors. So far, everything's going great. We're on schedule. that's probably about to change. We're starting to get delays and stuff coming from materials for supply chain issues and stuff. So back when we issued the, re-advertised the RFP, you know, contractors went out, they got bids, they got quotes from vendors and everything, then it was subject to change. Well, that change is now happening. And so things that were available in December are no longer available now. So we're starting to see some long lead times, but we're getting pretty creative looking for solutions and stuff. I think at the end of the day, I think realistically, we're probably, this project will probably get pushed back 2 months. So we're looking at maybe instead of a July timeframe, maybe we're looking at August or September when this comes online. The great thing about this project is we're not up against a hard date to get it done. It really is kind of at our leisure. So having said that, we do want to get Railroad Avenue back into service for the town of Lyons. We do want to get this up and running as soon as possible. But we've got a little bit of float in our schedule. There is FEMA dollars tied to this, but that's not until the end of the year. So the fact that we have so much float in our schedule, we've got 6 months worth. If we have to delay the project a month or two just so that we can get this correct parts, that's fine. So that's kind of all I have for the South St. Vrain pipeline. So the next sheet is one I don't think I've mentioned to the board before, because this is a new one for us. It's a small project, a relatively quick project as well. So this one is one that I inherited from Larry Wayno. He was the engineering administrator over at Engineering Services, who retired. And so as part of our 2013 flood recovery, we removed the North St. Vrain pipeline from the creek. It crossed this section of the creek like five times. And so now we've put it, this section of the North St. Vrain pipeline is actually in Apple Valley Road. But in order to close out our 1041 permit with Board of County from that project, we had agreed to remove two sections of pipe. And you can see where I annotated remove section of pipe, and I've called that out. And so the orange line is our North St. Vrain pipeline, and the green line is the town of Lyons water line. And so as a courtesy to them, we're gonna go ahead and remove their water line as well. They're paying for it, you know, financially, but we're taking the lead on it, getting the floodplain development permits. We're getting stormwater construction activity permits from Boulder County, which we have. Before we started construction, we did do a site inspection with Boulder County. They gave us rave reviews. Everything's going great. So right now, we're over here on 558 Apple Valley Road. That's over on the left. We've already removed both sections of pipe from the creek. We've capped them off. We're now mobilizing over to the 416 Apple Valley Road site that's over on the right. The Lyons water line is actually pressurized up to a valve right up to the area where we're going to cut it. So we're actually going to take that line out of service for one day so that we can cut into the pipeline. It's 250 PSI water main. So that's, we don't want to do anything with that kind of pressure on the other side of a valve. So we're going to take that out of service for one day. We'll cut into it. We'll physically disconnect it. We'll pour a kicker, which is just a fancy word for a big pile of concrete. So that way when we turn the water back on and that water pressure hits that valve, it won't try to push the pipe away and become disjointed. And so we're going to put some reinforcements in there to make sure that that doesn't happen. And so anyway, it's a relatively small, minor project, but we are against the clock on this. We need to have this done, you know, by the beginning of April, and we're on schedule to do that as well. And so, anyway, this one's going good. Working with in partnership with Boulder County, with the residents here, and so everything's been going good on that one. And this one here, I know I've never talked dollars on this one. This one, I'm estimating is going to be about $200,000 to remove these two sections of pipe. So then the last handout I have is for the upper North St. Vrain pipeline alignment study. So we've talked about this before, how you know the upper sections of the North St. Vrain pipeline are very hard to get to. Some of it's on a cliff, some of that pipe is suspended. And so we're looking at, all right, you know, it's coming to the end of its service life. It could be taken out in the next, you know, next flood event, or a rock could fall on it. You know, what do we want to do in the long term? And so we've identified several different ways that we can divert some of our water to Nelson Flanders that doesn't involve using the Upper North St. Vrain pipeline. So the upper section that I'm referring to is the yellow dashed area. So this is the one that has two tunnels. This is the one that has timber cribbing, rock cribbing. This is the one that I would like to invite you guys to go on a hike and explore this and see it for yourself. You kind of have a greater appreciation once you've actually kind of gone up there and hiked it. And it's a relatively easy hike. It's 2 hours, but it's something that we can do here in the spring. And so anyway, looking at, you know, long-term plans for this, you know, one of the ideas is, well, we can replace it in kind, which, you know, has some advantages to it, but would be very challenging because we don't really have a means of getting, you know, an ATV back there, let alone an excavator or a crane or anything like that. So that would, you know, those are some considerations. So the thought was, well, let's leave our point of diversion at Longmont Reservoir in place, but let's just realign the pipe. And so one of the thoughts is the red line here, you can see, let's just put it along Longmont Dam Road. Longmont Dam Road, this would require a tunnel section. It would also require a siphon to come back up to the hill. But the great thing about this is you have easy access to it, and it gets 100% of our diverted water to the hydro plant. So we'll actually, where you see the yellow and the red line come together, that's the top of the penstock. So we'll actually be able to keep the hydro plant in service. So moving to the right, you can see the green line over here. The green line is the existing line's diversion structure. So the town of Lyons used to, you know, provide their own drinking water until the flood of 2013. Well, their diversion structure is still in the creek, and we could potentially use that. So one of the ideas is, well, we could retrofit it to accept 28 CFS, which is our carrying capacity. Right now it's designed for, I believe it's 6 CFS, so it's not very much. And so anyway, we'd have to highly modify that, and then what we'd also have to do is we'd have to pipe it down Apple Valley Road to our North Pond. So benefit of that, it's much shorter, much easier access. Downside of that, we completely bypass the hydro plant altogether. And so then another option is looking at just adding a pump station. We could potentially add a pump station right there below the North Pond. We could potentially pump water from the creek into the North Pond and from the North Pond to our North St. Vrain pipeline. We could also just tie it directly into our North St. Vrain pipeline, have another interconnect, or could do both. Again, some benefits to that. One of the couple downside is, you know, you're putting the infrastructure within the floodplain, so that's not very good. You're reliant on power, so now as opposed to generating power, you're consuming power. So that's not very good. Again, you're bypassing, you know, the hydro plant. And so then we're looking at, well, maybe we could do combinations of all of these. You know, maybe one of the long term, the end game is to realign or replace the upper north line in its entirety where it's at. But at the same time, why can't we go ahead and invest in the Lyons diversion structure so that if a boulder should fall in the upper north pipeline, we're not completely taken out of the game. Like, hey, we can still divert some of our capacity to Nelson Flanders. It's not optimum for long term, but at the same time, it does add redundancy to our infrastructure. It is susceptible to contamination events through, you know, vehicles, you know, crashing into the creek off of Highway 36, which happens about once or twice a year. These are things that we're looking at, and so I just want to let you know that we're still working on this study. We've done the SES, which is the Sustainability Evaluation System, which is a process of looking at this not just from an engineering standpoint, but also from an environmental standpoint. So we've completed that. Dewberry is our consultant who's going to take all this plus two dozen other design criteria. We're going to put this into a report, and then we'll start doing a workshop. And so one of the workshops we'd like to do is with the board and kind of present our findings. And, you know, the workshop is a chance to present findings, and provide you with an opportunity to give us feedback and with what your thoughts are before we conclude that report. That's where we're at right now. So.
A lot of decision making.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the cost to do this, you know, we thought we had a pretty good handle on what the cost of some of these projects are, but now with what's going on, it's.
So what, as far as timing on, is this something you want to have done by any particular date, or what are your thoughts?
So for the study, we'd like to get this done before our next CIP budget cycle, just so that if we want to start planning for the long term, at the same time, if it goes beyond that, this isn't something that we're not, it's not like we're going to start budgeting $30 million to start construction in 5 years on any of this. Some of, you know, we could potentially do an easier project like the Lyons Aversion Structure. Maybe that's something we do in the next 10 years. Maybe we make, if we decide to replace the Upper North Pipeline in its exact location, maybe over the next 10 years, we're looking at doing site improvements and stuff like that, access improvements, so that when it comes time to replace the pipeline, we can actually physically do it. Or, you know, if we decide to realign the pipe along Longmont Dam Road, you know, there's going to be heavy permitting involved in that. That's going to take several years. So, I guess looking at this, you know, we're playing the long game on this one. This is nothing that I don't think anything's really going to materialize in the next 5 years, other than the study and planning efforts and permitting efforts, stuff like that.
Questions,
Jason?
Sounds like
I see there's an in-stream flow on North St. Vrain Creek here. And I was wondering if there's ever been any studies there as far as deficits to the in-stream flow, insofar as using the natural stream instead of a pipeline. I know that incurs transit losses, but I don't know.
I'll let Ken answer that one. That might be out of my wheelhouse there.
Yeah. Actually, there's a whole bunch of history on in-stream flows in the North St. Vrain Creek. There is an in-stream flow, 87, 88 vintage. It unfortunately doesn't do a lot below Longmont Reservoir because the fact that our, basically all winter long, our decree of 28.5 CFS for hydro plant sweeps the river the entire winter time period. I spent probably 20 years doing an in-stream flow program on the North St. Vrain, North St. Vrain that pretty well got blown up by the state and the flood didn't help it. We do want to reestablish that some time in the future. I don't know when or how that could happen, but we had quite a very effective program in conjunction with St. Vrain Lake Water Conservancy District in the state. Most of the irrigation ditches along St. Vrain. That is certainly an advantage. We were able to, in addition to keeping the hydro, but it's one of those things, you know, what is better for the environment? Having a hydro plant, you know, good, clean, green energy, or having an in-stream flow. I mean, you know, those are two competing interests. I get it. And that is still something so we're all going to have to wrestle with as time goes on. But we were able to do both for quite a while, and it was a pretty effective program. And, we're hoping someday to be able to get that. It's going to be a big lift, and it takes a long time to really get a program like that going. And, but that is, you know, one of the things the sustainability evaluation system looked at was there's definitely an advantage. Again, you have to look at, you know, what, you know, unfortunately, the environment isn't, you know, a single thing. You can run water down the stream more, but then it's over quality by the time you pull it out. And that's one of the things we've looked at really, really hard at Longmont, is that we enjoy some of the highest quality water source because we divert out at Longmont Reservoir. Rather than once you go below Longmont Reservoir, there's a considerable amount of stream site septic systems, and then there's a considerable amount of impact from roads and quite frankly, car accidents. You probably remember a couple years ago we had a tanker truck crashed in Napa Valley and 5,000 gallons of fuel. You know, you don't want to be running that into your water treatment. We do currently have the building. We do occasionally run water down to the Highland Ditch. We have an carriage agreement with the Highland Ditch. We divert it in the Highland, you know, we carry it down to there, divert the Highland Ditch, put it in the water treatment plant. And that is actually, we didn't have that when we did the prior in-stream flow program because that plant wasn't built yet. But now we have that ability and could do that. So there are a lot of options to be done with it in the future. And I hope after spending as long as I did and my career getting that other program going, I hope to get it going something. I'd love to see something else coming. It would be great. I mean, that's part of what that SCS evaluation is. You know, impacts the water quality, but also the benefits of the environment. A lot of give and take on that kind of thing.
So, what you're showing here are kind of three different alternatives. Are there other alternatives in the mix, such as keeping water in the river, or are these three alternatives the ones that are really kind of the...
So this one's more focused just on the Upper North Pipeline and the alternatives for that, not alternatives for water delivery as a whole for the city. So it's really focusing on this yellow dash line we know is going to become a huge problem for the city, and it's going to cost millions of dollars to fix it, tens of millions of dollars to fix it. You know, we need to start long-term planning for it now. So that's kind of what this study's been focused on.
And on Jason's picture there, you see the little orange pump station. That's illustrative of what you could do there with that pump station. We actually looked at a number of different locations. One of them is at the Palmerton Rough and Ready Headgate, just east of Lyons. You could run it down to there. We have most of our change cases have that as an alternative point of diversion, which really helps us because you've got to be careful not to take too much into water court. You get slammed every time you take something into water court. So even though that orange line is at that location, we certainly, as these things move forward, you can look at something like that and say, well, the benefit of moving that. One benefit we have of the Highland Ditch and the Palmerton Rough and Ready is we're below the confluence of the south. And so now we have both all of our decrees on the south and all of our decrees on the north available at those two locations. So there's so much to look at that Jason's really busy looking at all those things.
So I guess inherent in that orange line then is essentially keeping water in the river, delivering it to that point of diversion.
Correct. Yeah. And exactly as Ken mentioned, that pump station, the idea of that is, I mean, we've identified that five other locations, but just for simplicity to put it all on one page, we just showed one. But that's what the study's looking at is, okay, the pump station, that's an idea. Where would it be best suited? And so now we're going out and doing individual studies as well. And so, kind of like the Lyons diversion structure, do we want it to carry the full capacity? Do we want it to carry just what it can already take? A combination. So these are the big ideas, but each idea, we're diving into the details, and then the combination of each idea and the different options we have that way. And I guess the way that we like the hybrid options because it gives us the most flexibility in how we use our portfolio.
Yeah, I totally understand this. Just kind of what competition or something between water for hydropower uses and water for kind of in-stream uses, as was mentioned. I think I remember from our tour up there, though, it was that, and don't get me wrong, the hydropower plant is amazing, and it's got this wonderful historic kind of aspect to it that is very special, I think, to the Longmont area. In terms of the amount of power it generates, it's relatively. I mean, what was it, 0.1% or something like that?
It, If you look at our total energy supply, it's very small in turn. We actually have a requirement of 10% renewable energy generated locally.
Yeah.
And if we're looking at that, that actually is, I think, 2% of that 10%. So it does, even though overall, you're right, it's like 0.2% of our overall supply, but it does actually help us meet that local generation.
So this is really specific kind of niche, I guess, within, okay, I get it.
I would cry.
Yeah, it's awesome. And we also, in the SES evaluation work, just in terms of the hydro plant, not just thinking about the renewable energy, but also the cultural and historic significance of the plant. So a couple different factors that we looked at.
The other thing to consider is if we were to take the hydro plant offline, that doesn't mean the hydro plant would go away. It's a historic structure. It would still be there. So it would almost be a shame to be sit there and not to be used. So it's not like, hey, we'll return it back to Mother Earth and we'll tear it down and now, you know, wildlife can then flourish. I mean, it would still be there. So, and we would still have to maintain it. So it just
didn't we just out of curiosity after the flood do some upgrading in that hydro plant based on what damage you heard there?
There wasn't too much damage. There really wasn't any damage to the hydro power plant because the north pipeline was fairly quickly basically plugged off along the reservoir, so we didn't get any debris or anything down to the hydro power plant. But at about that time, ironically, about a little before that, they had completely automated the plant. So when our last plant operator retired, it's now operated automatically.
Anything else, Jason? Oh, excuse me, go ahead, Al.
I love the idea of a workshop because this sounds like it could be really interesting and have a lot of different aspects that could be considered and weighed. And if this is a really big lift, it's going to take a long time, I think, spending that time with them would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and the feed, actually, so Dewberry, when they participated in the SES, so they were one of the participants. They actually sent us an email afterwards saying, like, it's so great that we had the SES tool and that we used it. He's like, you know, we work with a lot of municipalities on projects like this, and a lot of times it's just a one-person show without taking into any consideration of sustainability, planning, anything like that. And so, anyway, so kudos to Longmont for being a forward thinker and pioneers in that, because they were, I mean, they said that, like, we've never seen a municipality really care and have workshops like that and get so many different participants in there. So.
Anything else, Jason?
Just for one second, then, I mean, with that in mind, can you tell us just a tiny bit more about the SES?
How about Francie? Because I think this is her baby now. Sure. So.
So I want to start with, I'm referring to the internal sustainability evaluation system. There is an external one that's slightly different that's used for certain development projects. So our internal sustainability evaluation system, it's essentially a tool applying the triple bottom line or sustainability lens, whichever way you want to refer to it, to large scale projects. So we have, I would say, two different modules. The first one's like really early on, maybe if you're developing a citywide plan and wanting to think through, okay, do we need to factor in transportation staff and water staff and kind of just factoring in. We did the module two that really looks at different options and factors in. There's 11 different topic areas, from best practices to economic vitality to natural environment to energy, transportation, water, and within each of those larger categories, it's really broken down into subtopics. So water could have water conservation as well as water supply, and we actually added a couple for water rights, there was one other that. Also in the kind of the realm of water rights, natural environment,
That's where we have things around watershed, but also natural environment can be broader outside of that. And then you pull together staff from across the organization. So it's not just Jason thinking through this, but we had staff from who run our hydro plant, who are part of it. We had staff from our water treatment plant. We had staff from who are bringing different perspectives to it. And essentially, we go through and rate the tool together. And you go through and you essentially assign a rating based on an established scale. And then you kind of do it together. So instead of everyone doing it individually, we recommend you kind of do it individually to get an idea, and then you come together. But it's a really a conversation. It probably took us 5 hours.
Over 2 days. We had to do it over two days.
I was asking Jason that we could. There is a final report we put together. That I believe we can send out to the board if you all want to review it. With the context that this is just part of Jason's analysis, but if you're interested in kind of looking at like the key takeaways from the SES, I would be happy to share that out.
Yeah, that'd be great. That takes me back to my consulting days back when I was fresh out of college, I guess. These are the types of things that I used to do in consulting.
Yeah, likewise, I'm interested.
Okay, Jason, anything?
That's it for major projects. Just a quick reminder that the South St. Vrain pipeline rehab project's done, so I'll stop giving you updates on that one. And as soon as the pump station is online, the South St. Vrain pipeline will then be servicing Nelson Flanders through the pump station at Highland Ridge.
Very happy with that. It's been a long time.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Francie? You've got a water conservation update.
I do. So a shorter update this month. I believe in May I'll be doing the larger update where I'll have our total water consumption numbers from 2021 so I can show you all the trends that I usually do about once a year. But just wanted to let you all know that a lot of our starting gate in the summer outdoor water conservation programs, Garden in a Box launched so we have two different types of discounts. We have a $25 discount, which sold out in less than a week. And then we have our CARES. So we have the Longmont. Oh, I do not know what that acronym is. It's a rebate program. I do not know what that acronym stands for. But we provide a $100 discount through that. So that we are not having as, last year we actually sold that one pretty quickly as well. We're not having as great of an uptick this year. But I think there was also a drop in CARES participation month. So it could have been a number of different factors. But we're still promoting that one and hoping we can have greater participation in the $100 discount. And then this year, Resource Central opened up their turf replacement program to more communities. Longmont's not currently participating this spring. We are in conversations to join in the fall, and there will be official announcement about that in May, in early May. So when I have the larger announcement about that in May, we can talk a little bit more about Longmont's participation in that program.
And thank you, because there's been a tremendous amount of interest in that program. So everybody wants to get rid of their turf.
Yeah. We in general, Resource Central, they told me the demand is just way higher across every single community they serve. So I think they're already thinking about hiring more staff. So it's not just here in Longmont, but all across the Front Range, huge demand for that program.
Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Ken, monthly legislative report.
Yeah, not too much to report. We don't have any bills that were actually recommended to court or opposed or anything like that. There is one bill, though, that I thought I would highlight just because you actually made it questioned about it. We've actually got a couple questions about it. It's Senate Bill 22-029. It's an anti-speculation bill. We've talked about anti-speculation in Colorado for a very, very long time. And there's been different ideas thrown about. There's more concern, I think more so on the West Slope, some big things going on over there. Some water being bought up a little bit in Arkansas, but just a general kind of concern about speculation on water and the general thought that, yeah, that shouldn't happen. That people should be utilizing water, but shouldn't be buying it up, trying to speculate on it. But that being said, so this bill basically sets up an anti-speculation law that is not real clearly defined in that what it would do is if somebody's purchasing water for purposes of speculation on it, just to make money, that the state engineer's office can intervene. It has a kind of a funny requirement for ditch companies that ditch companies have to declare a minimum amount of shares per user that the state would use as a criteria to determine if somebody's speculating. And I have no idea how ditch companies are going to figure that one out.
Ditch companies not.
Exactly.
They don't have an idea right now.
So it's been introduced. It hasn't even come out of committee. I'm not sure it'll make it this year, but I don't know. It's not going to impact Longmont because Longmont doesn't. One reason we have a charter restriction that says we can't sell water, so we're never going to get water that we're going to quote speculate on it and try to sell for a profit. So it really doesn't impact Longmont directly. So that's one reason we don't take positions on bills that don't directly impact Longmont. But it has scared the heck out of some of the development community. The development community tends to go out and buy water, especially for Longmont, because you can use it as part of your development process. So there has been some water that's been purchased. Then the developer holds on to it, annexes a parcel property, and then dedicates that water to Longmont. It's non-historical. So, I mean, we're pretty familiar with that process. So we've had a number of developers call us and say, do I got to sell my water? You know, is this going to affect me? And I says, nah. Not really. I think as long as you know you can show your nexus, I have this water, I have this land, I'm passing in Longmont. But I, you know, really truly honestly can't promise that. It depends on what somebody did, you know, once the bill changes. Right now, I don't see it affecting even any of our developers. But who knows? You may be asked by somebody saying, hey, I'm concerned about this. Or you may be asked by people saying, hey, this is a good idea because I don't want speculators from New York coming in and buying up water in our basin. So if it starts moving forward and we hear anything, sure to let the board know. But I find it a little interesting. It's a really good idea. You don't want speculators, but that's a really hard thing to really churn into a law. We'll see where that goes. I don't know where it'll go, but about the only big water bill I think that's really we're watching real closely to see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Any questions? Yeah. Okay. Let's go on to item 10, review of major project listings and items 10 on the schedule for future board meetings. Just my comment on looking at these, basically, this is the last meeting that we're talking about several items, and then beyond that, there's no dates scheduled, so to be determined. I don't know, Ken, if there are some items that we better ought to set some dates on, or what are your thoughts about that?
We don't need dates on those unless the board would like to have something coming back. The water system yield is just a study, you know, a study we do about third or fourth year. And certainly when that becomes ripe to do again, we'll do that again. The stream management plan, you know, has been done by the district. They did come in last fall and give us an update on that. They are actively, the district is looking at doing some work in that arena. And rather than try to set a date, I prefer waiting for the district to give us some input on where we're going. And then again, the attainable housing, we'll that's probably sooner than later, but we're trying to fit in well with where the committee group is looking at that. We'll be following that.
Any comments from the board on schedule?
I was just going to say, I just want to make sure we don't lose momentum on continuing to think about the cash in lieu criteria, and just making sure that we continue to set up that justification, or kind of firm in that justification, I guess.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and that is, we do have that. It does come every quarter. So.
Yeah,
and we will continue to.
Yeah, and so in my view, we have kind of 3 months to think about that again, right? And when it's all said and done, that's only 6 hours of water board time, I suppose. So just making sure that we continue with the momentum on that.
Okay. All right. Move on to annual water board report, which is pretty sizable.
Yeah, it is. And basically, you know, it's your report to council. So if there's ever anything you want us to do differently, all we try to do is help you out by compiling it for you. But yeah, we put it in your packet. And if there's any changes or any revisions you want on it, we're happy to do that. If not, we just have the board accept the report that we compiled, and we will then send that on to city council.
I thought it made us look like we did more than I thought we did this year.
Yeah, just
a lot. I thought it was a very positive report.
Maybe
I just forgot some of the stuff for the year.
Yeah, it's amazing when you put it all together. A lot of good things.
Yeah. So are you looking for us to move to send it on to council, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, if you are happy with it as it's currently compiled, we'll receive that, and you can give us direction. We'll pass it on to council. Or council is your report.
Any thoughts, board members?
I thought it was a really well done report, and I would move to accept it and send it on to the city council as is.
Okay. How about all in favor? Yeah. Okay.
I was only around for half the year, so do I get the
half a vote? We're around enough to a full vote.
Okay.
This next item, I hope you've got a chance to read a little bit about this, but this is something that is new to us and new to all the commissions. The council and Marcia, you can weigh in on this, but evidently the thought was that if you're looking at candidates for board membership, it wouldn't be a bad idea to have board members be involved a little bit in the interview process. And I take it this is a pre-council interview process, but I think it's interesting for us to have a look at the candidates and maybe comment on how we feel the candidates may be appropriate for these boards. And I think it's interesting that we're moving forward for something like this. Marcia, how did this ever come about, by the way?
Well, there's a number of things. First of all, since you all went through the council interview process, it's ridiculous, right, that you're going to choose somebody that has as much authority and brings as much insight into this process of keeping tabs on how the city's water policy is being carried out. And you get picked out of a 5-minute interview from a bunch of people who, on average, know about nothing about why they're picking people, right? So the idea was, let's have better qualified applicants and fewer of them so that we can understand things like, is this person, you know, do a manager interview, right? Is this a responsible person? Does this person have a weird agenda? Does this person have, you know, we want to just do those high level management things and not do, does this person know anything about water? And is this person qualified to actually weigh in on the subjects with this that the board reviews? So the idea is that the board, either with a nomination committee of 2 members or with a committee of the whole, would interview the big group of applicants and pick out a smaller group of applicants, which can be as few as one, right, or one per seat, that the council would interview, and hope that there would be a more respectful process, as well as ending up with the most qualified board we could have. So that was the idea.
Just out of curiosity, when your council interviews with proposed board members, do you have a set of questions that you ask, or how? I'm not trying to be nosy, but I am trying to be nosy. How does that work?
Well, you should be nosy. Yes, and actually, that was an innovation. The first year I was on council, we didn't. You know, we just showed up and went round robin, and everybody asked a question, which isn't. It's not. If this were a for pay job, it wouldn't even be legal to interview that way. You know, since it's a volunteer job, it's not regulated, but we should still use best practices, right? So after the first year, we started having a list of questions that we would all ask, and or we would ask every candidate. And then I think the second year, we actually had the board ask the board to recommend what questions to ask. But you know, it still made it was a 5-minute interview. You really couldn't ask. You never got through the whole list, and you couldn't really find anything out about the person. So we were really voting on the resumes, right? You guys all have really stellar water resumes, but for many boards, that isn't true. You know, it's easy to look and say, oh, but yeah, this person is a land use attorney. I guess they do okay, right?
You don't get the word guess.
You just don't want that.
Pardon me?
So what, just looking forward, if we were to be involved in the first portion of the interview process, would we be given questions, or would we, how would the questions evolve?
So Don Quintana has a list of questions that was the list used last time. And now this is, I haven't read what you guys were given. So this is what I believe to be true, because you guys are in charge of the process. So she has a list. You guys can look at that list and say, this is a great list, we're going to use it. Or you can look at the list and say, that has nothing to do with it. Let's put this question in instead. So you can develop your own list, but you should then use it for every applicant the same.
Okay. The question, did you have a comment?
Well, I was just going to say, and yeah, the process is really set up around the staff liaisons will work with the boards to set up the questions, set up the interviews. We'll do the lifting and getting the, you know, the venue and getting the entities there. And basically the board will just actually do the interview. So really the two questions today that we kind of need to answer are, does the board want to do two, maybe three, or all five board members? And of course, Tom's not here. His term's up this year. So if he chooses to run again, then he wouldn't be able to be on the interview. But if he doesn't, then he could. So that's really, so really the biggest thing we need today, I mean, we'll talk about these procedures and where we want to go, but it's, you know, how does the board prefer doing it? You know, just, you know, two or three or five. And when do you want to do it? Because we kind of need to know at least that much so we can get things set up. The interviews will be in May. Just so you know the schedule, I think it's April 22nd is when the applications have to come in. And so then whoever on the board will be interviewing will, you know, we could have two or we could have five. We really never have a whole lot of, we don't have tons and tons that you'll have to interview, but however many come in, we'll set that, those interviews up in May, and then we have to interview the interviews in May so that we have to give the results to council, I think it's the first Friday in June, so we really can't wait till April, because the 22nd is actually after the board meeting in April, in just a few days, so it'd be really tight to try to get something going. That way we can get the questions, we can get the procedure set up and work with the board members on your timing and, you know, when we can do it.
Yeah, let me just pose the question to you three. They are proposing you can do one or the other depending on what your desires are. We come up with a committee of two board members or all of us be involved, and I'm curious how you all feel about what your preference would be. Let's start with you, Scott. What?
I would be comfortable with having a subcommittee. I don't think it's necessary for us to convene the entire board for that purpose. That's our comfort level. That's the desire. We can certainly try that. I look at my May time frame, and I'll be hard pressed to find the time to participate, but
so,
would we be in person, or
you can do them recorded too? If you wanted to do them virtually, you could do those interviews virtually.
It'd make it a little easier to record it. Mm-hmm.
That's a good question.
Yeah. So, let me just make sure I understand what you're saying. Just have just a committee of two do it rather than all of us be involved.
That's my comfort level for disclosure. I mean, I'm a co-managing partner of my law firm. All I'm doing right now is interviews. That's what I do for a living now, because as you, it's hard to find people that want to work in Longmont, apparently. Go figure. So trying to convene a bigger group is a nightmare. That's my practical rationale.
Okay. How about you, Tom? What's your thoughts?
I could go either way. I don't mean to be wishy-washy and not make a decision, but like Scott said, I mean, I'm comfortable with you all doing it instead of me, but I would love to. So I could also be part of that subcommittee, or we could all do it together, or whatever.
I'd be inclined to a practical approach, see how many people we get and how many of us we can get scheduled and take it from there. Because I likewise I'm comfortable with more, but to the extent we get a lot of people.
I'm kind of inclined, rather than to say, okay, here's the two doing it, my preference would be those that want to be involved, be involved. We all have different ideas, and I think we have a little more robust process doing it that way. So maybe we can just leave it that way, that as we get to the situation, we can ask who wants to be involved. And I guess, Ken, what we're kind of saying is we don't want to restrict it just to two.
Okay.
For a committee, that's what I'm hearing. So
it may be just two, but you're open to having more.
Yeah,
so you might have you want that flexibility.
If it's fewer than five, then it's a committee. Otherwise, it's all of us.
Yeah, and actually, water board only five members.
Yeah, that's
some boards are 10 or 12 members.
Yeah.
Right.
I wouldn't want to put 12 people around the table.
Well, it's really daunting for an interviewee to have that many people involved as well, in my opinion.
That's one thing that they suggested in there and talking about that. If you do consider having the whole board there, just be cognizant of that fact to not be overwhelming to the candidates coming in. It's daunting.
Do we get to determine, or I mean staff perhaps get to determine the time, like the timing? I mean, I know that we just talked about the restrictions in terms of like when this window that needs to happen.
Well, we would
but
have
like
to
Thursday
work with you all to figure out what dates and times would work. So
I'm just curious as to like, I mean, if it winds up, so this past year there were two applicants for when I, so I mean, there would be, if it was a 10-minute interview, that's 20 minutes of a water board meeting.
You're saying it's a 30-minute
It's up to 30-minute interview.
No
to
longer
30
than 30,
minutes.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. 30 minutes seems like a long time, but
I don't think it's predetermined.
Okay. So if it was longer, then of course that would work during water board.
Well, we'd have to probably look at our schedules and see how the timing of that works out. And I like the flexibility of saying if this is the window, who's available and who's not available.
Okay.
So
it does seem like each candidate needs to be treated the same. So
yeah,
we
well,
have
yeah.
a block
yes. no,
where
I
can interview everybody.
Right, right. No, you we want to, yeah, we don't want to have different.
Well, it's fair to assume we'll have one space available on the board
yeah.
if Todd's term is up.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, of course, how many relatively qualified people apply. If it's a not low number, it may be a very small time.
Yeah. But Todd is, I mean, he is term limited, is he?
Actually, so Todd, when he came in for his first term, was a, filling a vacancy. So he has only served one full term, and he is eligible to serve another term.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Been on for two terms, but not two full terms.
Okay, all right.
So he's
if he wants to.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
He's
wants.
Selective. Yeah.
Has he stated his desire one way or the other?
He's trying to think it through. He's got. He's also, you know, on the board of Northern, and he's also got a son that's a senior in high school, you know. He's looking at possibly moving out of town, so he's considering a lot of different options. I'm not sure he's made a decision yet.
Did you tell him when we need a decision?
Well,
you can't wait till August.
He's got 1 month.
Okay,
yeah.
He understands that.
Yeah, he has to apply by the 22nd.
Okay.
The other thing, Ken, because you mentioned a lot that the staff is handling a lot of logistics, which was a really good thing to mention. But the other thing is, if it is a committee of two, you don't have to notice the meeting.
Correct.
And that would mean that it would be easier for you guys to schedule if you're having a hard time scheduling. If it's any more than two, then you have to notice the meeting or hold it during the water board meeting, which is already noticed. So I just thought I'd stick that in.
No, it's good. I
brought that up. I hadn't thought about that. good deal.
Yeah.
So anyway, I guess we'll see. Depending on Todd, you know, we might be involved. We might not.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, staff will go ahead and start getting this process together. We'll get some questions together. We'll get a process together.
Have you actually posted for applicants?
Yeah, I think the process is open currently for applicants to apply, or not yet.
But
yeah,
I mean,
we
I'm
don't
trying
know
to figure
who
out if Todd says he's staying. You know, there's no reason to.
Ultimately, he's just an applicant. Right?
He's an applicant.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's
so if
yeah.
he is,
okay.
He,
all
right.
All right.
He made
all
it
right.
a sole
all
app. All right.
All right.
That may make it easier.
All right.
Make it easier, but.
Okay.
Can
I did. Any other comments on this interview process? I think it's a good move, Marcia.
Yeah, well,
you know, there's
yeah.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit of burden.
Well, Well, it does. It relieves a little of the burden on council, but it was just dumb, you know.
It really enriches the process, I think.
Well, I don't know how they did it when they had all of them at the same. They used to all be in December. You know, but now they're split half.
Yeah.
Can't imagine.
I don't know. It
I remember.
I did not have to experience that.
And this process would happen twice this year. So there's the mid-year recruitment that happens in June, and then there's the one that happens at the end of the year too. So.
But if there's no seats available, then there's not a process.
That's true.
Yeah.
Water board, I think yours will come up in June, right?
I think so.
Yes. I thought that through. Yeah, half the boards are June and half the boards are December. So water boards are this June.
All right.
Very good. Item 11, anything on that? Additional items?
Highlight.
Okay. And cash in lieu, as Ken said, we bring that up quarterly. Any comments on future water board agendas? Anybody or Ken?
Just if you want, if there's something, an opportunity for the board to ask for any items that you might be interested in or information.
You know, I had one question, Marcia. Are we, is the city going through a revision of our comp plan or in the process of that? Or?
Yes. I'm not sure how formal it is going to be. It's going to get formal when it gets adopted, and I assume, don't quote me on this, I assume it's going to get reviewed by the boards that have anything to do with land use, which would be include you guys, I would hope. The idea is that the revisions will have to do with going from a suburban land use model to an urban land use model. Anything I said about what that means, other than you can stick more people in the same space, would be an old opinion of mine. And I have them, so I'm gonna keep my mouth shut and say that's the essential driver of this is making the comp plan more appropriate to an urban site than a suburban site.
But could have impacts on our water needs, though.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's what I mean. Anything that has anything to do with land use, and in fact, I think it was you, Ken, I encountered you and said, how are we doing in terms of looking at a higher build out number in terms of heads? Because that needs to, at some point that's gonna need to be reconsidered and probably in light of, as well as in advance of the new comp plan. That's definitely gotta happen, and it, just like the existing one, all the pieces have to fit together, right? And especially as you increase density, transit becomes a lot more important, because the philosophy is you want more of the people who work here to actually be able to live here, and that reduces automobile traffic, at least. Nationwide, the studies show that it does. Nobody believes that here, of course, but a lot of different pieces, including water consumption, because of course you have more showers, fewer lawns. So it's a big deal.
What's the timing on that?
I would not venture a guess.
So here, no comment.
That's not the same thing. I would not venture a guess. It's an absolute comment, right? They have to do it. They I don't think they know how long it's going to take. What everybody I talk to understands the basics of new urbanism, So at least they are somewhat prepared in terms of what the parameters they are going to be considering are. But how long it's going to take to get agreement and you know, get all the gears to mesh, I would not venture a guess.
Yeah, I just wanted to add in that, so Envision Longmont, our comp plan and the sustainability plan are going to do a joint update this year, or I think this year. I know there's been, it was going to be this year, and I think there's just things changing and depending on staffing, so it may begin later this year. But I just wanted to highlight that those plans are going to be updated together. The sustainability plan was passed after the comp plan, but the plan was for them to always be very integrated plans. So trying to figure out a joint update, and I know staff have started to start those conversations, and with the water efficiency master plan update that's to be finished by 2024, we've also talked about how can we do some joint engagement and also analysis with that larger update. But again, I also unfortunately don't have a date either. I just wanted to let the board know that looking at kind of two of our big overarching guiding plans together at the same time.
I didn't know that, and that's a really good idea. And I think it's a good check and balance that Francie and I both said, well, it's started, but we have no idea when it's gonna end.
Thank you. Nothing else on the agenda, any kind